Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
This is Heather Manuel, and you're listening to the Vegas Bad Boys.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact. I have all the bad boys here with me. But first off, usually on the three count, we have three unique stories that is searched and decided to have a conversation or a debate around. But towards the middle of last week, a hashtag started circulating and it became viral, hashtag speaking out. Women and men in professional wrestling bravely came forward to tell their stories of mental, sexual, and physical abuse they encountered. The names exposed came from the top wrestling companies to the smallest indie promotions. Some have denied the report, others have apologized, and many others have chosen to stay silent and even went as far as to delete their social media accounts. Now, on this episode, we will only stick to one topic, and that's to talk about what has been exposed in professional wrestling so far and where we go from here. Tonight, included with the Vegas Bad Boys, is indie pro wrestling star Sarah the Rebel. How are you, Sarah?
I'm as okay as can be expected with what 2020 is giving us.
Absolutely. Look, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Just to start with you, you released a statement on your social media, an experience you and your friend, who's also an indie pro wrestler, had to deal with. If you'd like to talk about some of that to give context, please do. But I definitely want to start off, if you don't mind, sharing with us your opinions and thoughts about the severity of these experiences that have been exposed about the wrestling industry and how that will affect the industry moving forward.
Sure. So it's funny that it's all coming to a head right now, because this isn't something that just came up. Mm-hmm. Women have been dealing with this, all of us, for decades now. And each new wrestler that gets into wrestling has to deal with whatever new form that takes. Yeah. And so I moved out to Vegas from LA and immediately was disgusted by what I was faced with when I moved out here. So many wrestlers sending me inappropriate pictures, bombarding me, trying to kind of make me hang out with them. And a lot of them under the guise of, oh, yeah, we can train, or we can do this, or you can be my manager. But, you know, they were after the same thing. And I felt like an attack almost, mm-hmm. like a barrage. And I was like, this is weird. And so I kind of mentioned it to the girls that are here. So Maserati, Queen Estrella, and I talked about it a lot, Sandra Moon. And as we're talking about it, I find their stories and I hear what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And just for example, I have to throw FSW under the bus, but like, obviously there's something going on there, because all of them had stories from training about inappropriateness, about guys attempting to groom them, about people using the training to actually like harass them. She's on NWA. I can't remember her wrestling name. It might be Myra still. But she actually quit, and who knows how many other girls have quit training because of the treatment they received. And we were in the car one day, and I was like, why aren't we doing anything? Mm-hmm. If the women here don't have any power, you really feel so powerless to say something. Like, when I moved here, y'all should have warned me. As soon as mm-hmm. I moved here, you guys should have said, hey, Sarah, heads up. The guy's here. Here's who you need to look out for, blah, blah, blah. And if you feel so powerless, why aren't we pulling in, like, Chris Bay? I know people listen to Chris Bay. They respect him. Like, why aren't you getting the guys on your side? So for me, this is, I know to some people this might seem like women have just decided to attack people in the wrestling industry, but these are issues that have been boiling and boiling and boiling in different places all over the United mm-hmm. States for years and months and decades in some cases.
Yeah, what do you think what do you think made the now become the time that they came out?
People aren't, they don't have bookings that they're afraid of losing right now. That's it. The whole reason women have barely speak out, we've told the male wrestlers, think that the men of male wrestlers who I'm friends with, who you've seen in my circles, they don't know about these guys and what they've done? They absolutely know. And they haven't said anything, and they've never said anything over the years. I think Alligato even mentioned that. She's like, I've said this multiple times. It's just the first time you've listened. So I think what's happening right now is none of us have the booking next week that, okay, well, I don't want to say anything because I'm doing this show next week. And it could be a big opportunity for me. I think that's what's taken it away, is we're not afraid of what we'll lose by speaking out right now. We've all been shut away from wrestling for so long that we're like, why not? How can they hurt me? You know? And that's crazy. That if you really think about that as a fan, I hope you absorb what I just said. We haven't spoken out because we're afraid of the retaliation.
Yeah. Right. Got you. And Bad Boys, if you guys want to jump in here just to add some questions, feel free to do that. This is a, I tell you, when I saw this streaming on Twitter and just reading what I was reading from everyone, I was very disappointed, but in many ways, I wasn't really shocked. Because, you know, when you have friends over time that are in the industry, or even sometimes just fans, and you're around people and you hear how they talk sometimes, you could tell that, you know, they don't have the sort of the right mental state of, you know what I'm saying, of being in that position. So you're just going, man, for real, like, how you get to where you're at right now, acting that way, you know? Yeah. I'm just curious, though. You mentioned FSW. It looked like the owner did make some moves there. How do you feel about his decision of rapidly making that? Is that something? I mean, is it too late?
It's not as rapid. Mm-hmm. It's not as rapid as you think, actually.
Okay.
Before this, the women of FSW had a meeting with Joe.
Okay.
And they talked everything out as one group to him and laid all the evidence on the table. And so he had actually already made some of these decisions ahead of time. Now, of course, as new information came out, he added that too. But this was already part of the decision. You know, in his perspective, he's like, you know, the unprofessionalism of these trainers are driving away potential wrestlers from here. Like, as a business owner, at the very least, you don't want that. And so he had already been making plans towards this. So I'm really happy to see that he was, and it was going to happen even if this trend hadn't happened.
Zara, I got to tell you, when I saw that you were moving out here, I was very excited to see you possibly be with like an FSW and what may have come of that. Is that the reason why you never really like sunk in and participated in any of the shows?
Someone who hasn't been named yet was really trying to get with me. And when I didn't want to get with him, he basically lied about me to Joe and told Joe that I didn't want to wrestle at FSW because I thought I was too good. And Joe has known that person for so much longer than Joe has known me, right? So to my knowledge, he still believes that to be true.
With all these changes that are happening now, are you at all open to possibly working for FSW at all?
You know, I was actually asking myself that question, you know, once I saw the announcement. It's something that I'm definitely going to consider, but with the double whammy of what's going on right now is there's a pandemic. And right. I know either way, in order to build a relationship with FSW, I need to go to training there. And I'm just absolutely not comfortable going out, and especially in the numbers that they have in their training classes, I really don't feel comfortable. So it would be very far in the future if I did.
Okay. So do you think that there should be more, let's say, like women trainers in these roles and positions, maybe even ownership, just more having women involved instead of being so heavy men oriented, that maybe, you know, that maybe can help fix this issue. I'm hoping that this is, now that it's exposed, it will stop. But, you know, history always shows that things stop for a minute, and then eventually down the line, they find its way to come back. Do you think that would be something that could kind of change?
And I know that it would, because at Santino Bros, where I train, we have Sylvia, and she goes by Jezebel in the wrestling world. And she made it very clear to anyone who is a trainer there that don't sleep with the daggone trainees.
Right.
Don't do it. You know, if you know her, you know her very brusque way, like, don't you do this.
Right.
I have found that anytime there is a complaint against a trainer, they have videotape running the whole time they do training. They go, they look at the tape, and they have kicked trainers out. They've even kicked out people you would think that they could never kick out because they are Santino Bros. And
right.
they have. They've said, you're not allowed to come be a trainer again. We'll assess this again in a few months and see if, you know, you can keep yourself together. And that's not even for sexual harassment. That could be bullying. That could be anything.
Yeah.
And it's definitely because of her influence. And I think the more places where you can have, the example I gave earlier, the women of FSW didn't feel empowered. They didn't feel respected enough to convince anyone of the issue. Right. So they didn't have the mama bear that you sometimes find. And that's kind of what we call it, you know, the locker room mom. They don't have somebody there who is treated with the respect of the years that they've been wrestling that they should. And so that's kind of where any issue is you need to have a woman who is respected, that at the very least that you can come to her and say, here's the issue, so she can pass it on. But hopefully even influencing the entire culture of the company.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned bullying, you know, as part of what you were saying. How prominent is that? Like, you know, during sports, there's hazing and things like that. Do you feel like there's a bullying culture underlining in training and stuff like that, too?
In training and then in wrestling world, you get bullied at WWE. It's all bullying. I think one of the problems is that to keep wrestling from being a place where they pay people the way we're supposed to be paid, they have had to cling to the carny aspect of wrestling. No, we're carny. We don't need this. We don't need that. And it's this whole giant, I don't want to say conspiracy, that makes it sound weird, but it kind of is. It comes from the top bottom of, like, I had to suffer to get where I needed to go, so you need to suffer to be worthy of being a wrestler. And you could see it in Braun Strowman's tweet about, like, oh, I should feel bad for you. I baled hay. Well, I'm sorry, Braun Strowman. I'm 5 feet tall and a female. I can't go across the country baling hay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's a stupid thing to even say. But so there's this belief that I suffered, you should suffer. You're not even suffering as bad as I suffered. Hulk Hogan's leg was broken in training. So he has no sympathy that you got double stomped really hard by someone who doesn't like you, you know? So it's part and parcel of our wrestling culture, and it will be as long as we continue to cling to this idea that we're so much tougher than the average person and only the toughest people can be wrestlers. And that holds us down from forming unions, that holds us down from getting paid properly, from being actual employees instead of all freelancers. Like, it's all one big cycle that I feel holds wrestling back really strongly. And yeah, so the short answer is yes, bullying is like part of it. There's no right now there's no wrestling culture without bullying.
Do you ever believe, with all those issues and now the stuff that's come out recently, that there will ever be an opportunity for a union?
I think when John Oliver's piece came out and there was no change after that, that led me to believe that there will never be change. He laid out really clearly everything that was going on. Everyone saw it. People who had never spoken to me about wrestling before were telling me about it. You know, everyone was very aware of the issue. And then nothing was done. And then we watched Vince McMahon pay off a governor to be able to open his show. You know, we can watch. Oh, we watched them go to Saudi Arabia right after someone was killed. Now we watch them, like, let some wrestlers be maybe kidnapped. You know, we know that company is not doing right by wrestlers. And no one has done anything with those things happening. Then there's just nothing you could do. I don't know what else you could possibly do to show that there should be a change or to spark outrage. I have no hope for it.
Well, a lot of it is exactly what you said. You know, a lot of it has to do with the system that's set in place. and it's gone decades and decades. And yeah, we're talking about WWE because WWE is the bare standard. And until we start having these conversations and looking at facts, there was one article, I'll just put a couple of stats on, it's Inc.com. 54% of women report workplace harassment. How is your company responding? It's not just with wrestling. It's just across the board. Mm-hmm. 54%. That yep. means that more than half of women don't even report it. Do you see what I'm saying? And the ones that do report it are fearful of their repercussions.
And there's usually retaliation. Yeah, I mean, that's what just happened with Cards Against Humanity. You know, what excuse do they have? They aren't some huge establishment. You know, they're Cards Against Humanity. Why are they treating people like this? And it's like that everywhere. And I've seen a few tweets from I used to be in the video game industry. So I'm seeing tweets from my video game industry friends who are seeing the wrestling thing. And they go, God, is there nowhere? Is there nowhere we can work where this is not, you know, going to be an issue? It's really frustrating.
You think, though, one of the biggest factors with wrestling itself is that you have so many, you have the big companies, which are only, you know, 6-7, you know, companies that are major names. Then you have everything else that's independent. And with that, the problem that has always come along is this idea of the promoters in it for themselves. B, one of the biggest things is the idea of policing the locker room and essentially kangaroo court as well. So now you've got an institution that your promoter wants to make money. So your top, his top people that are going to make money are going to be protected. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be protected because it's insulated from the inside. I love the mama bear. That's a great idea. I think the problem is we don't have enough papa bears as well. Because what starts happening is no one is then stepping up. When you are a grown-ass human being, fucking step up and say something. Make the change happen. Because there's no way just being around in locker rooms my whole life and in dressing rooms my whole life. The thing is, word travels faster than a fucking, you know, a sewing circle. Everyone knows. And people won't say shit. And that's why this is so important, is because this could be that first momentum to get the independent owners to take charge of their fucking company and stop this nonsense. And that goes from sexual abuse, sexual harassment, bullying. How many times has a derogatory gay comment been used, not only in the locker room, which is commonplace, but literally in front of an audience? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what's so maddening about it, is that out of the blue, it picks up steam because of Twitter. So it seems like everyone's going, oh, wow, this is like so new and fresh. If you just look, there's no difference between what was going on, you know, that Wednesday before the hashtag really started trending, or going all the way back to the days of Moolah.
Right. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, it's just always been there, and it's always been an issue. And I could see what you're saying too. I think if wrestling could be more professional in general, that would kind of solve that too. You know, like, what if wrestling had what newspapers have, like an ombudsman or whatever, or, you know, an HR person? What if every wrestling company had their HR person that you knew you could go to, and, you know, like, had some sort of structure to it? And that's something I mean, even besides the harassment issues, I think it's really something that holds a lot of promotions back that could be doing better.
Right.
You know, they have everyone working 4 or 5 different positions, mm-hmm. and no one knows who's in charge, whose responsibility should this have been? Who, you know, like, that's something else that kind of contributes to it. Because I know there was somebody announced who did train at Santino Bros, who was announced as part of the list, and none of us, I don't think anybody important at Santino Bros even knew about it, but none of us knew that they didn't know about it, kind of thing, you know? So it's like, where was the reporting? Who should have they have told? When does it not become tattling? When does it not become trying to throw somebody under the bus? And when is it, hey, this is a very serious issue you should be aware of, and, you know, how do we navigate that?
That's a very good point, because of the fact that you just brought up the idea of throwing people under the bus. And unfortunately, because of the fact that there is no stable, you know, structure that goes from company to company, that you have people who won't believe certain things because of the fact that they're under the impression that, oh, well, they're just saying that so they could get themselves further.
Right.
You know, it's like positioning. It's almost like chess playing with people's fucking lives.
Yes. And I mean, the girl who reported that particular person didn't even want to do it for several days because she's worried about his career. This person choked her, tried to kill her, and she's like, but do I want to ruin his career over this? Isn't that like, that's how twisted up we are in this idea of us against them, wrestling versus everything else, and keeping it, you know, kayfabe in a way. Yeah. You know, it's just, if that had happened at an office, if I was like, you know, Jim in the next cubicle choked me, I wouldn't be like, I better not tell anyone Jim could lose his job, right? I would tell them, hey, I've been choked out by Jim. HR, could you maybe do something about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said a very good word, an example of how things are used, and that is kayfabe. Because kayfabe really is meant in the sense of protecting the illusion. Right? Magicians are a perfect example of people who do their whole profession kayfabe. But they don't use kayfabe as something that is being done to prevent something that is, you know, absolutely wrong coming out. And that's, I think, for many, many years, it's been able, you know, to just be like, you know, hey, we don't talk about this. It's kayfabe.
Yeah. So it took me working with, I worked with a show out here in Vegas, Atomic Saloon Show. Barbie Hayden was also on it. And what we were dealing with was acrobats, people who went to circus school. I don't know if you guys know the circus school is a real thing. This was all very new information.
I've heard about them.
And looking at, like, I would be like, hey, how'd you learn you could do that? And they'd look at me like I was an idiot. They'd be like, I went to school for it. And I'm like, okay, I didn't know that was a thing. But talking to them, seeing how they worked, seeing how they interacted, it became more and more clear to me that, like, wrestling is acrobat's bastard grandnephew. And it's like, we were originally, they took their form that started in carnivals, just like wrestling, and they turned it into a very legitimate business. They have very legitimate schools. They have trainers. They have unions. They stick up for each other. They have rules. You can't pay me this. You can't make me perform unless the ring is to this specification or my tools are. They have protected themselves and elevated something that started off in the carnival. And I think that's why more than ever, my heart, I look at wrestling and I'm like, we haven't elevated ourselves since the 50s. The 50s were the last time there was like an elevation of the sport. And I know part of that is because the people making money off of wrestlers make more money. I heard the other day, there's a promoter who said he pays everyone $20. And he said to someone else, oh yeah, you know, sponsorships come in. We get about $5,000 in sponsorship. I keep $3,000. Then I give the rest to running the show. Promoter is paying themselves $3,000 a month and paying every wrestler $20. And you know why? Because wrestlers will do it.
Yeah.
But you know, it's the funny thing you say that when we're talking about, you know, what women in wrestling and other professions go through. It's exploitation. And it starts with how the booking, you know, people who book the shows, they always are out for themselves. They're exploiting people who are working hard for their dreams to make it big. And they're exploiting them. And that's why they're fearful to be structured. And essentially, I'll say it, I don't give a shit. They are what's holding back wrestling.
Yeah.
Plain and simply. They are holding back wrestling. And the owners, whether you're a big promotion or small promotion, you're scared. You're scared because you don't want your business to tank. And you don't have the gonads to actually step up, put a structure plan, put in an HR, an advocate, and continuous training or sexual harassment, professionalism. You're getting people off the street and you're teaching them how to get in the ring and protect one another in the ring, but you're not learning, teaching them skills on how to be professional.
Right.
So yeah. It falls onto them, and I have no problem in pointing right at the screen and saying, you know who you are, fix the shit.
Well, one of the big things with that, and I think that's a very good point, you know, it's one of the few industries, we'll use the term industry, where you just have to have money and you can start up a fucking company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, we train professional wrestlers, yeah, put on shows. There is no vetting process,
yep,
at all on these trainers. And it's up to you and the owners. And it's up to you as someone who is either an actual performer talent or someone who's training to do your research and homework, which is,
yeah,
so unfortunate, because basically that's what they're doing, is they're throwing the wool over. They're basically kayfabing you into thinking their company is a you know, oh yeah, come on, we'll do this for you, we'll do that for you. And then the promises go unfulfilled. And the, you know, I mean, FSW is local to us, obviously. So we're very aware and we're around the situation. But if you look at, you know, the big scope of things, FSW was run through one person. And then, like, you know, there aren't tiers that are official. There, you know, that would benefit, because the company is set up well. How many little companies in Indiana, Oklahoma, Arkansas, you know, South Dakota, where these things happen, and these, anyone, if you're bullied, if you're male or female, if you're harassed, you feel like you can't turn anywhere, because everyone in that community knows you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a huge problem.
Yeah, I have he calls me his mentor, but I have a young wrestler from another state, and he's dealing with that, where, you know, he tried to report something that was going on. He's now being, like, blackmailed in a way, being bullied, being left out of things, and, you know, basically asking me, well, how do I get out of this? How do I get to other places to be somewhere else? And we're hearing a lot from the stories that came out these past few days of people being told that they weren't allowed to work anywhere and believing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Knox Pro tells students that you can't work anywhere else. And if you've got Rikishi telling you, hey, you can't work anywhere else for this carrot that's being dangled, though, maybe a year from now you'll get to wrestle. Maybe a year from now I'll tell WWE about you. Maybe a year from now you'll get to do something, right? Mm-hmm. And so these young wrestlers, so many wrestlers come straight from high school into wrestling. I think that's another very big issue with wrestling. OVW is trying to resolve it by, they became an accredited school, and they actually have courses. They teach you history. They teach you this. They teach you that. And I would love to see that for other places, because
yeah.
I was just talking about this with another vet. When you come to wrestling from another industry, like I did, I was in the video game industry as an adult and then came to wrestling, you really clearly see the things that are, like, you're like, what do you mean you can't wrestle anywhere else? Go wrestle wherever the hell you want. But these kids are coming in at 18 and they're being told, oh, I can't wrestle anywhere. And they believe it. And they think that everything that's happening is what it should be and what it's always been. And so it's even, you know, like you were saying, yeah, the promoters are at fault, but the promoters and the trainers breed this cycle that will just keep continuing, because they've got these young kids who are brainwashed into thinking, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? That's what we always say in wrestling. you know, yeah. And they want it pretty bad. So they'll deal with and think that certain things are okay when they're not.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that one other thing that really needs to be said as well is that, you know, it's obviously the culture is in itself an issue, in that, you know, the locker room is most commonly referred to as the boys. Okay. So when those boys do something and, you know, word travels, whatever, then no one pays attention to it because it's just the boys being boys. And it's a really big issue that, you know, and Sarah, I'm glad that you had mentioned that this was a good thing that happened, because I agree with that 1,000%. Something, unfortunately, we can't change the past, but I'm super excited to be able to purge these people from the culture that did things that, you know, quite honestly, no one knew about. I looked through the list, you know, and the list is growing minute by minute, unfortunately or fortunately. You know, I'm glad that these people are being brought to light so that we can get them out of our lives, and so that people don't have to be pressured to be a fan of certain people any longer. Yeah. And I feel, you know, Steve, I feel horrible for everything that's happened, but
Steve, let's get into that, because I think that's a very good point. Mm-hmm. And let's start right at the top with the WWE. You have Matt Riddle getting these accusations.
Yeah.
And again, now the double-edged sword here is that you can use the term accusations to manipulate the narrative of what you want to tell. And Vince and that company, because they're lawyers and they're experienced with this, are so fucking amazingly evil and well-trained at doing this.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that Riddle, the hashtag really exploded on Thursday, and Riddle's getting his first match and celebrated big win over the Intercontinental champ.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you've got Velveteen Dream,
uh-huh. you
know, which is a whole nother, you know, instance of something that came out months ago.
Right.
That just got swept.
Under the rug.
Yeah. And we all thought, oh boy, this is not good. This is it for this guy's career. And nothing.
They kept him off TV for a little bit.
Yeah. But he was injured, you know.
Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to be injured when they have some stuff come out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what's interesting is that those are two guys they've invested in. Look at guys like Enzo and Cass, who they did things that were uncalled for, but they weren't top tier moneymakers. And they were also not liked in the locker room.
That's so the most important part.
Exactly. Exactly. So at what point does a big machine, you know, finally, is this something that it's going to take the awareness of something like Congress to step up and look at this, because it is a business? And look at Major League Baseball, the steroid scandal. Oh, this was, you know, steroids. This is bad. This is huge, blah, blah, blah. Well, what did it lead to? Major League Baseball made changes. I haven't seen Vince McMahon make a change at all with these years.
No.
He's probably scared his dirty laundry's going to come out.
Dude, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. I mean, since the 90s, I've been hearing about sexual assault at WWE. You know, mm-hmm. I was a kid hearing about sexual assault at WWE and how the women are treated there. And they've never made a change about it. The WWE has shown time and time again that they're almost invincible. There's really nothing, you know, the only change they're going to make is if they feel like it, if it behooves them in some way that they feel like, well, maybe, for example, let's say Black Lives Matter. They see this is going on and they're like, you know what? We're going to have the New Day be able to go and do a little fist thing because that's trending right now. And that's, you know, that's going to show that we are a company that cares. But then let's look at their actual track record and say, well, do you care? Are you actually making changes? Are there actually going to be things more than just this moment that we can post on your, on the Twitter a year from now, in February as well? We can reuse this for Black History. You know, like, that's kind of where WWE is. So if this becomes like, kind of like you were saying, if Congress were involved or something like that, if this became way bigger, I could see them paying some lip service to it, but would there be actual changes?
Yeah.
Talk is cheap.
So, and you know, that then kind of trickles down to the thought of other major companies. So, I think Havoc, Jimmy Havoc, he's gone, right? So AEW.
Well, he's not gone.
He's in rehab. Yeah, he's in rehab for mental and for mental issues.
Okay, but they are doing something actively.
Yes,
correct.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. And I believe actually I heard on Observer Audio that because of you know, medical legal proceedings, they actually cannot fire him while he's in a rehab facility. However, once he completes rehab, that they can revisit the case, and at that point, you'll probably see a separation.
I think AEW wants very badly to distinguish itself from WWE. And so I think we're going to see AEW crack down on things like this harder.
Yes.
Just to highlight the difference between them and WWE.
So that brings up a good then next level. And that is, we saw names like Marty Scurll, and you know, some of these names on, you know, the ROH level, the Impact level, I hate to say it, DJ, but there were two accusations about Jay Lethal.
That's nothing new.
Well, that's the interesting question here, is that the "that's nothing new" seems to be our, like, our basic, oh, that's nothing new.
No, well, and you say that, but I say that's nothing new, as in it's the same thing. They were brushing under the rug,
right?
And it goes exactly away. But the problem is, it doesn't go away for the person that was harassed.
Exactly.
It doesn't go away for the people who were affected. And that's where the problem is, because there's no money to be made in listening and advocating for someone who have been victimized. And see, that's the problem. And until that changes and people stop putting money in front of doing the right thing, this is going to continue to happen. And it needs, people need to stand up, not just what's happening in the core females. Us males need to start stepping up, whether we're in the industry or if we're not in the industry. We need to step up. It starts with core conversations from mentors. And father, I have a 7-year-old son, and I check him when he's being innocently, inappropriately talking around females. It starts there. That's where the culture starts. If you don't start there, then you're just adding a Band-Aid to a gash wound.
You know, it's interesting that, and this is, it's a weird perspective from someone, you know, not having kids, but you just brought up your son, who is younger, you know, at an age that, you know, is below double digits.
Yes.
But you have a daughter who's hit double digits.
15.
And it's, what's interesting is that you just brought up your son first, about how, you know, how you shouldn't talk appropriately and stuff. What has it been like for you as a father to have to talk to your daughter about this? Or, you know, because the typical dad guy response is, if a guy fucks with my daughter, I'm going to kill him. Right?
True.
You know? So how have you been able, and I know DJ, in a few years you're gonna have to deal with this, and same with you, Lucky. What, Simon, have you done to make sure that your daughter knows that she's ever in a position where she feels uncomfortable by anything in a work environment or in a friend environment, you know, amongst her friends, that she can speak up? Like, how can you make her know that this is safe to speak up?
You know, I've had talks with my daughter since she was 7. And I always would tell her, I put her in front of the mirror, and I would always tell her, like, you're important. you're worthwhile, and you have a voice. Don't ever let nobody tell you what you want to do and what you can't do. You are the person that decides what you want to do. And with regards to that, she's gotten older. You know, I've told her, and we've gotten into some she's encountered some situations to where, you know, boys are going to be, you know, typical boys, but I don't give her a typical response to tell them back. I tell her that you look them in the eye and you tell them, you are not going to talk to me that way. You are not going to treat me that way. And if there's any further problems, you're going to find out about it. But the biggest thing is I want her to feel empowered, not because I'm giving her power. I want her to recognize her power that she has within. And that's just the way that I raise my daughter. And it speaks volumes as these situations, as she gets older. Always know that don't be afraid. We have a support system that loves you, but it starts with you. You got to be able to tell them you're not going to treat me that way, because she knows what she's worth.
Yeah. Sarah, you know, let me ask you this. This comes from our good friend Don Ramon, who is currently enjoying listening. He wanted to know, as a female training at New Japan, how drastic was the professionalism there by comparison, given that you were the first female to train at the LA Dojo, and you've also held positions working backstage and managing fans in the line for meets and greets and the events at Long Beach's shows, which he, you know, thought was handled really well. What was the culture like in their dojo?
It was handled well because I just took it over. It was the most awkward experience, but not for that bad of a reason. But I was the only woman there out of 30 guys, right? Oh. And so they brought in Mima Shimoda, who those of you who are longtime wrestling fans might know, or Japanese wrestling fans might know Mima Shimoda, or she also works in Mexico a lot. But she's a bit of a legend. And they brought her in because they knew they had a female trainee. They had certain things they wouldn't do. Part of the training is they put you on a tire wheel and they stretch your back. When it was my turn, no. Mima Shimoda has to come over and stretch her. We're not touching her. They made that distinction and that awareness. It was very important for them that I was not even put anywhere near a position where something questionable could happen like that. And they brought in a woman to help with their woman training, you know? So like, I think that was really smart on their part. A little jarring at first because, you know, every wrestling school in America, you're kind of thrown in there with the guys and you're treated like a guy, except, you know, by certain people who might be unprofessional, but like at Santino Bros, for example, like I was treated like a guy to the point they even taught me to take bumps the way guys do to like protect their balls. Like I got the wow. The wow girls are like, why are you bump like that? You're a girl. You can bump like this. And I was like, oh yay. And then I bump like that. I wasn't impressed because I spent most of those 5 days dying and wondering why I was even allowed to be there. But looking back at it, it is very impressive that to the point where we have one female out of 30, and we're going to bring a woman all the way from Mexico to come to this training with her so that, you know, nothing inappropriate occurs. So that was pretty cool. And then their office, they have women working on the staff too. And it was very clear that they were, you know, there are some cultural things in Japan as far as the hierarchy goes. But for the people working there who are from America, those women were treated, you know, in a way that let me know that they were very valued and respected. And I was made to feel valued and respected when I worked that side of things as well.
Do you, off the top of your head, and any of you guys could chime in on this too, because I can't think of it. Is there anyone that you've encountered who actually is a female who owns a company and runs a company that is not exclusively just women?
I know one. She's new, and I would love to give her a shout out so that people can support that company. It's called Empower Wrestling, and you can find them on YouTube. They just bought another company, so they're about to get even bigger when they come back from the pandemic. But Empower Wrestling is run by a woman. and I felt so respected and taken care of, and it was so professional when I worked out there. And they're a company that is trying to build and is trying to do the right thing by women. So I hope that they eventually get a lot more support.
That'd be something that maybe I don't want to say turns the tide, but at least starts a presence, because of the fact that, and this is a term that's been used over and over, the good old boy network. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like that was always kind of, you know, the thing, like you said, Steve, boys being boys, but even as far as being, you know, oh, it's just the good old boys, you know, this is how we run things, this is how we do things. We're now is the perfect opportunity to see a woman in a role of owning a company, which is amazing that she's doing that. How does it go from one person to multiple people?
And you know, I've been advocating for, I remember back when I was at Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, the storyline for women there, pretty boring, I'll be perfectly honest with you. And I offered multiple times, I'm a writer, I write on WoW, I write on all sorts of different things, I have books published. I'm like, would you like some writing help? I'd love to help write storylines and pitch you ideas and stuff. And Heather Monroe said the same thing. But there are a bunch of guys who live in basically one house, and they plan everything there. And they said, oh, it would be too inconvenient to have you come over to the house, you know, every certain number of days to do this. That was what I was told about why they wouldn't have that opening. Now, flash forward months later, and they have that commercial that they had to take down and edit. Because in the commercial, they named literally every guy in the commercial. And when they got to Heather and I's match, they said, the girls. Well, what does that tell your audience right there? That tells your audience, this is an attraction. Come see some boobs. You know, like, we're not athletes like everybody else. We're the girls, you know? And the fans caught a hold of that and started tweeting about it. And all I did was retweet it. And I got pulled into a meeting with, you know, the person who runs Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Oh, you don't have to take to social media for things. If you have a problem, you should come and tell me about the problem. And here's the basic problem with that whole thing. If they had had a woman on staff, she could have caught that before it ever went out. Yep. She could say, hey, did you notice that you did this? I know you didn't do it on purpose, but did you notice that you did this thing? And maybe we shouldn't do that. Uh-huh. And that's why I tell so many companies when they're having troubles, and it also goes for what's going on right now with Black Lives Matter. I'm like, if you had a person of color at a high enough level where they felt empowered to say something to you,
right,
you wouldn't even have run into this problem. And so I would like to see, and I've already seen one wrestler step up. She's from the East Coast. She plays a teacher on WoW, and she's one of my favorite people ever. And she's already said, hey, I want to work backstage. Are there any companies that want to have me work backstage and start to learn so that I can work up to these sorts of things? And that's what I think the next step is, us women and the women who are veterans having these positions in backstage and companies, starting to get that experience, and then being able to eventually have their own companies. The woman who runs Empower worked for a very major television show. And that's why she comes with the knowledge of how to run the cameras, how to run the lights, how to set the thing, how to schedule a show. But for a lot of us, we don't have that experience, right? And if it's this boys club that says, sorry, we meet at the house, you can't come, then we're never going to get that experience to apply to running our own shows. So that's like the first step, I think, is companies need to not just say, oh, we're going to kick these people out. They need to say, and we're bringing on Allison Danger to be our vice president here, and blah, 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 you know, like whatever it needs to be, start bringing in your vets, bring them back, and ask them to help with a backstage capacity so that we can start building and gaining this experience.
Did you happen, I know you brought up Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Did you happen to be with the company at any time David Lugano was working there?
He would stop by a lot, but I don't know that he was actually working. I think maybe he was analyzing for NWA, but we've spoken extensively.
You know, and again, you know, this is, he's one of the names that, you know, came up, and, you know, you start looking at people saying, well, there's history here and et cetera, et cetera. Did you ever hear anything or get a sense that you know, that here is someone that you're around that, you know, has had these different stories, you know, about him. Was there anything that you looked at him and said,
Yeah. So when I was first contacted by Lagan, I was excited. Oh, maybe NWA is interested in me. He said he's seen some of my work and things like that, that he was at Championship Wrestling from Hollywood multiple times. And so I told Bateman, and Bateman said, oh, well, you know this, that, and the third about him, right? And I'm like, oh, no, I did not know this, that, and the third about him. So wow. That's kind of the thing that happens to us a lot. And it's not just women, because young men are being groomed in the same way. Mm-hmm. But we think this person's talking to me because they like my work and they have an opportunity for me. And I want to keep this connection with this person. And I did. It was very professional on my end. I made sure of that. But I kept a working relationship with him because I want to one day work for a company, you know, that he might be there and he might have, you know, a way to help me in there. And that's one of the big major problems is everyone feels that way. So yeah. No one is going to ice him out, you know, because everyone thinks this might be an opportunity for me. I had another person on that list is a promoter who would talk to me all the time, right? But like would send me messages that weren't sexually inappropriate, but were weird and strange, like explaining that, you know, blue eye means this and it comes from the Nazi term this and da da da. And I'm like, why do I care? I don't care about this. Do you have news about the show for me? Like, why are you messaging me right now? And I had to keep talking to this person because I want to be on that show. I want to have this opportunity open to me. And that's the problem a lot of us are navigating, is that we would make group chats and we would just, hey girls, do you know about this guy? What's up? What's this person's deal? Does anyone have, you know, at any time when a new person hit me up, I would immediately message, you know, Heather Monroe or Maserati or Katarina Waters and say, hey, do you know this person's name? Because that's what we have to do to protect ourselves. And then usually we still have to keep talking to this person in some capacity.
Let me ask this question. I'm sorry, Matt. Did you want to jump in? You want to finish?
No, you go, man. Get it.
Okay, no doubt. So let me ask, and this could go more for you three, Simon Street, Matt Michaels, and Sarah, because you all have had experience in the ring. From what I've been hearing, it seems like wrestlers, promoters, trainers, owners, it seems like in many aspects, the connections with a lot of them is that they're treated more like friends instead of the owner saying, I have employees. Yeah, I may have my owner, my trainer. I know him and, you know, I guess you could say friends, but I have to treat him like an employee. Is the issue seen that these circles are just so close that it seems like it's just impossible for anybody to approach someone with what's going on in a particular school? Because everyone's connected, you know, is that part of an issue? That's kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I say, hey, there's this guy, he's doing this. And it's like, well, I've known that guy for a very long time. So, and that's one of the problems with sexual assault accusations in general. Everyone's always like, why didn't you report it? Why didn't you report it? You know, trigger warning. I was raped when I was younger and I didn't report it because the guy told me, oh, I'll tell everyone you're a slut. Right. And that is normally what is said about women in wrestling when they say, hey, this guy grabbed my butt. Well, look at how you were acting. Why were you not wearing all your clothes in the locker room? Blah, blah, blah. So there's this idea that because we're friends, I'm friends with this guy. I don't have bad taste. I wouldn't be friends with a terrible person. You know, so this chick must be lying. And it becomes very us versus them. And if people had that professional relationship, if this wasn't, oh, I'm so happy to know this wrestler. That's how a lot of promoters are. Oh, I'm cool. I'm friends with these wrestlers, whatever. Then maybe people would be believed, or maybe, like I said, there could be a process or a system for addressing these kinds of concerns. But yeah, it becomes, I have to become friends with any promoter that reaches out to me because maybe then I'll get to wear a championship belt at some point. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's all very much like that. It's networking and who, you know, Bateman had been wrestling for 17 years. right? We'll use him as an example because I know all his information. So he's been wrestling for 17 years. Undeniably amazing wrestler. He's very, very skilled and very good. Why wasn't he getting anywhere? Turned out his problem was networking. He wasn't talking and hanging out. He wasn't going to after things with people. He wasn't meeting the right folks and keeping in touch with them. And then he finally started to get those opportunities to do so. And now, boom, he's in Ring of Honor. You know, so it's definitely who you know in wrestling. And mm-hmm. you know each other, you look out for each other because
yeah.
you're the boy.
It seems like the mindset has definitely got to change in this structure from what it seems. And it's not going to just change on its own. So I think that this idea of exposing everyone that has been needs to definitely continue. Now that the door is yeah. open, it cannot be shut. It's got exactly. to continue at all times, definitely by social media, so everyone could be aware, you know, yeah. because I don't think now that most of us wrestling fans who now see these names that are thrown out there, we might have been fans, but I can tell you mm-hmm. right now, it's a wrap. You know, and I think when people start to see that this should be taken serious, then that's when the culture then will begin to change. So we definitely got to keep this while it's open. We got to keep this door open. Simon Street, I think, did you want to say something? Sorry, man.
No. I was just going to agree with what Sarah was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people fail to report anything. Whether it's harassment, whether it's wrongdoing, whether it's not getting paid for shows, because they know somebody, you know, and if they do report that puts them in a bad situation. And again, I'm more of a let's do a course correction on the system, because there's always going to be individuals. We're going to shut them down, ship them out. And yet the system still will enable more to pop up. It's like it's trying to defeat a Hydra. You cut all the damn heads off. You know what I'm saying? Cut them all off
yep.
and restructure the system. Yeah. Restructure the system so it does not allow. And again, and I'll say, even for FSW, there's a lot of changes that Joe DiFalco has made. And I think it's great. But at the end of the day, one component I have not heard yet is, what is your training? What is your training that institutes harassment? Are you putting that into the curriculum? That should be the first thing that it just, in just my mm-hmm. opinion, Joe, if you're listening, no disrespect, nothing. I'm just telling you what I've experienced in just jobs in general. You put in a curriculum to where when someone signs up to be into training, they have to go through sexual harassment training as a regular core curriculum. You set the tone. And that's not just for FSW. It goes for all companies across the board. When you do that, you set a precedence of structure. When you set structure, you have policies and procedures that not only protect those who want to say something has gone wrong, there's proper channels that go into it. Without going into detail, don't just list names. Come up with solutions to restructure, because it is for the betterment of wrestling. Mm-hmm. I will tell you this right now. The people who are going to be listed are people who are only taking away. Mm-hmm. Aren't people that are going to build up other competitors. They're not people that's going to build up the business. These are people that went in, wanted what they want, took what they wanted, and ruined people's lives.
Yeah.
Until we start standing up and making that stand, it's going to keep happening.
And it's not even just that, you know. Santino Bros has the trainers go through CPR training. Yeah. You know, one time I was at FSW, and I gave a girl a concussion. And I'm looking around, and none of the people there knew how to check her for a concussion. I checked her for a concussion. She had one. But, like, they kind of didn't believe she had one. So what if I hadn't been there to say, nope, this is a concussion? Why don't your trainers know what to look for and how to check for a concussion? Just a preliminary one. So you can advise, hey, you should probably go to the doctor or not. You know, so it's not even just that. Like, so many schools, I think, don't think about the, like we've gone back to, the professional aspects that a real company would have to have in place. And I think it might be like something to do with the business laws in LA, why Santino Bros has had to be so on their P's and Q's about it. And I'm not sure if Vegas just doesn't have those laws or what, but I mean, anywhere, any training school that you go to, the trainers should actually know. And even feedback. How do you give a student feedback? Are they taught about the happy bun? Right? Robbie Phoenix always gives a happy bun. I don't know if he was taught about it or if he just figured out that that works really well for students. Anyone who doesn't know what a happy bun is, like, hey, Sarah, you took a really good bump there. Now, your headlock was on the wrong side, so you want to work on that. But, hey, great job with your character. You know, like, that's like, you know, even just like how you train people. You can go to some schools and they'll just be like, you're maggots, you're tearing them. Okay, do you want to retain students and actually train them, or do you just want to, like, I almost said a very inappropriate thing. Do you want to just make yourself feel good and feel powerful and strong? You know, so and as a owner of a training school, don't you want professional trainers so that people come back and you get even more students and you have this retention and people are paying even more and more money every month? Like, I would think the answer would be yes.
Well, and that brings up the, you know, I look at one of the names that stands out to me that we know here in Vegas, California knows, and that's Suede Thompson. Suede made himself, by all accounts that I've read and, you know, what I've heard, someone who came off as a veteran, trust me because I'm a veteran. Trust me because, you know, I have, you know, so much experience. And then it just, it's almost like with any type of predator, when they get the opportunities, no matter if it was here or California or wherever it is, the pattern is always repeated, you know. So you make, you know, that's the thing about independent wrestling. You make your way into a locker room, and now you're coming off a reputation, and you're selling yourself to everyone else in the locker room. How can it be that we can change that way of allowing someone to just present themselves as such without having a training certificate? So, for instance, I go to the gym, I hook up with a personal trainer who I have to pay money to. Well, the gym has hired that personal trainer, and by law, that personal trainer has to have an actual document for training. In the wrestling industry, well, you have experience, then yeah, okay, we can talk about your training.
A lot of trainers are unpaid as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's a thing that's going to be a problem for everyone as long as it remains that way, is if you are begging people to show up to training, you're not going to vet them. You're not going to tell them, you also have to come to this training, to that training. So like I mentioned, the CPR course, that was for all trainers who were getting paid by Santino Bros. But they also have assistant trainers, right? They didn't have to go to that. They were offered, you know, but they didn't have to go to that class. You know, so I think that becomes its own catch 22 of, I desperately need these people to train people for free. So I can't really ask that much of them, because what if they just stop coming and training my students? Then I don't have any trainers.
Yeah. And that also goes reflective on the problem of when you become a promoter, you either are in it to just say that you have a promotion and that you hang out with these wrestlers and these are your friends. It's a show for you, basically. Or more so, you have the idea of, I'm in this because I want to make money. You know, Beyond the Mat, Roland is a great example of one person who just looked in the camera, said, yeah, I'm just in this for the fucking money. You know, again, it's that weird, vicious cycle. Even with what you brought up, Sarah, about the proper training for like a concussion, back in the day, you know, I know when I hurt myself, we had no insurance, of course, and you've got no medical equipment around. We didn't even have ice packs. You know, when I hurt myself the one time, I hurt my shoulder. Literally, thank God Tom Howard ran across the street and went to KFC and got a freaking thing of ice because we didn't even have ice, you know. But at the same time, the thing that is most predatory about people who take advantage and abuse is the fact that when you're young, you don't think about things like that. Never. Yeah.
Yep.
Man.
And to the point where I think, you know, I bring up Santino Rose a lot because I went there, right? So I know a lot about what went on with there. But to the point where it's a little shocking when you train somewhere and you go somewhere else. Because you realize just how much of what you thought were rules or how things were done is actually just the decision of that owner, you know, as far as what the culture that they're going to make there is. And so, you know, that it's just something that you only become aware of if you go other places. And so many places tell you are not allowed to go to this other place or I will not book you in my show. There's sometimes fans who are like, why don't I ever see this person here? Why don't I ever see this person here? Oh, because I worked this other show that this person told me, if you work there, I'm never booking you again. So it's like, you know, you don't really get a chance to see. Again, it's with that brainwashing kind of mentality. Like, why wouldn't you, if you have a school where, you know, people are training, why wouldn't you have ice available? Why wouldn't you have ice packs? Why wouldn't you have ibuprofen? Why wouldn't you have a little, you know, medical kit? Like,
well, and to be honest, perfectly honest, as someone who has been SAG-AFTRA, okay, union, but also in non-union situations and working in production, one of the things that is absolute when you are involved in any type of production is having a medic on set. What is interesting is, even if you look at sports, you usually have some kind of trainer that will, you know, help you out if you're hurting, you get injured on the spot. There's people that come on in. Wrestling, there's none of that. There's none of that. Even if you look at, unless it's board certified by the state where it's mandated that you have someone on hand to be a medic, I mean, there's not even an ambulance standing by if, you know, someone was to have a heart attack in the ring. So it's a big culture change. That what is interesting is we're finally talking about this. Finally. And I have to say that it is because of the courage of every single one of you, every single one of you, that this is even being discussed. Yep. And I do have to say that from the bottom of my heart, thank you for joining us, because of the fact that I don't even see right now many podcasts or, you know, wrestling shows really talking to people who've had the experience, you know, and that is something that also needs to change. We need to communicate with each other. People need to know these stories because of the fact that if we don't, it's going to be the continuation of this cycle of abuse. And
that's what happened with, you know, when the Tessa Blanchard stuff happened, is this is something that, oh yes, all of us know this in the industry. And then you say it out loud and fans are like, you're lying. You want attention. It's just never be a thing, because they haven't known. We've gone through years of a certain type of thing being known. Lagana is another good example of that. Like, it's known, but it's not known to the fans. And so the fans are hit with it, and their instinct is to be defensive. I like this person. There's no way that this person is like that. You're lying. You just want attention, blah, 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 blah. And if they're, but I also, on the other hand, wrestling is all about kayfabe. And if we, you know, if we pull the curtain back too much, what's going to happen? Right now, any one of the people on that list could have actually not done it. Right? Like that's something that has to be acknowledged as well, is that there are people on that list who might be falsely accused. Just like in any crime where there's an accusation, it's apparently the numbers are almost exactly the same for sexual assault versus like robbery or battery or anything like that. So by the huge number of people listed, statistically, there are at least a few people on that list who didn't actually do it. And that's something that now you know, what is our conversation with the fans? How do we handle that? What can we say and what can't we say? When is it okay to speak up and when isn't it okay to speak up? All of that is so complicated and not easily like resolved. How much information do we want to give the fans? Usually not that much. We want them that, and not just for nefarious purposes either, for good purposes too. We want you to be delighted when Kevin Owens finally betrays Jericho, right? If you spent so much time waiting for that betrayal, maybe you didn't even enjoy it as much, right? You're like, oh, I knew that was going to happen. Where's the fun in that? The fun was in being like, oh, it actually betrayed, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's what we love about wrestling. So in wrestling, we can't reveal everything to the fans. And so it's not even as simple as just like open the floodgates of communication. You know, it becomes like, what is okay to say? What isn't okay to say? Do we create a whole new way of interacting? And who takes up the responsibility of creating that? Because the people who should be our leaders, WWE, they're not going to step up and do that.
No.
And you know, you brought up a great point, and that is the idea of kayfabe. As it relates to the fans becoming defensive. What is very interesting is look at, let's say, John Candy, lovable actor, right? And you see this, you know, his characters. You get a sense of who he was through the characters that you know. But you never know him. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing right now is that when you look at some of the feedback that, you know, some of the hashtags are getting, some of the people who have come forward are getting, they also are getting that slam of a fan mm-hmm. who sees only Matt Riddle as that character, the bro character. Like, how could he possibly do this, bro? I mean, they're actually saying that shit.
Someone literally said, oh, well, your story didn't include him saying bro even once, so I don't believe you.
Right.
And someone else had to share, like, an interview Matt Riddle did outside of wrestling, be like, look, here he is not saying bro. It's not his
thing.
That's the character.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? It's really not funny, but it's incidentally, the way you mentioned that, if you look at sexual deviance across the board, long time ago, you know, they always showed some creepy looking CLB looking type of dude is the one that's going to sexually molest your children. But in all mm-hmm. actuality, it was your uncle yep. or it was a family member or it was the neighbor who's a fine contributor, would always give to the poor. When are people going to wake up that sexual deviance is a personal choice of a sexual predator and they can look like anybody?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It can be anybody in your home. And again, identifying, educating yourself of what the behavior is, what grooming is, what yeah. are signs of grooming, and educating children to identify, and we talked about earlier, empowering and feeling safe that they can go to their support system and say, hey, this is happening to me. You know, it has to change. Again, it's a system and it's a culture. We need to course correct so this doesn't keep happening.
Yeah, without I mean, wrestling. Like, people will say things all the time about young girls, and we'll apply it to wrestling here. You come into wrestling training, and this wrestler who you idolize is paying all this attention to you, thinks you're yeah. wonderful, tells you how smart you are, how good you are at wrestling. What are you going to do? How, you know, like, unless, like you said, unless someone else in your life has equipped you with the knowledge to say, hey, this 35-year-old guy shouldn't be talking to you like this, and if he had a life or he had his stuff together, he'd be talking to a woman his own age. You know, like, you have to have had somebody already say that to you to even know that, like, oh, I shouldn't be flattered by this. I shouldn't be feeling like, oh, this is a really, because we're talking about the women who didn't like it, who left, right? But what about the women who stayed in those situations because it was too late before they realized just how messed up the whole thing was? And there's guys that people still haven't called out and still haven't said anything to who have this pattern of dating trainees. Right? Mm-hmm. But they're not crossing any line, right? The girls are 18. They haven't hurt them. So mm-hmm. as long as you don't hurt them, there's no big, you know, like it's just such a complicated, multifaceted issue. And I do think you're right. It has to start with education.
Yeah, most definitely.
You know, one quick last thing, DJ. But you just brought up something that's, you know, really sparked with some of what came out with Daisy Cortez and Sandra Moon. And that was, they weren't even 18. And
that's why it's easier for them to say that. You know, they have a protection, right?
Right.
You know? But what if I said that? I'd be like, well, Sarah, you've dated a wrestler in the past.
Right.
Let me ask you this really quickly. Should there be an age requirement on when people should start to train?
So there's a lot of different opinions on this. Some people say that your body, when it's still developing, you shouldn't do these kinds of high impact things to it because you can really hurt yourself. And there are some people who say you get over a lot of fears by, like, you know, the Mexican style of training, where you start training when you're like 7, you have no fear. You can do so many more things, and you know what your body can do, and you can condition yourself over a much longer period of time. So there's two sides, but I think no matter what the side is, if you are training anyone under 18, you should absolutely have to go through certifications in the same way that a teacher or any other person around minors has to go through. And that definitely includes, you know, sexual harassment information. It should include CPR, things like that. And it should include what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Because even if anyone who's been around children can tell you, sometimes children are inappropriate to adults because they don't know any better. Or, you know, they think they're a lot older than they are sometimes, right? So, like, you shouldn't just be having a random adult whose only qualification is that they've been wrestling for 10 years teaching children. You know, there should definitely be something more in place there. And Sandra lied about her age at least one company. Like, she's fine now, so I feel okay saying that, you know? But, like, that was so easy to do.
Yeah.
To just be able to say you're whatever age and do something, right? So there has to be things in place to protect people, and even, you know, from themselves, from each other, everything.
And for those of you watching or listening who don't necessarily understand why you can get away with that if you're a promoter, and that is, most promoters pay cash. So you never have to see any ID or anything that qualifies for you paying the person. So,
lack of structure, no transparency.
Yeah,
exactly. If you need to be transparent,
zero accountability thus far. I think that having some legitimate accountability needs to happen, and we all need to self-assess at this point. And those in power with the promotions, they need to, I'd say, spend almost twice as much time and take a look internally.
And I will say this, and I was going to say it earlier. I've been in Vegas since 97. And growing up, there wasn't a lot of wrestling opportunities. And one thing that I've always said for the longest is I really wanted to see female wrestling presence here in Vegas. Really wanted to see it. And this is even before, it's even the time when FSW first started off and they had Matt Hardy and they were handing out flyers. Having the opportunity to take my daughter to wrestling events and seeing her be excited. Now, obviously, we're at WWE events, but her witnessing Bayley win her first championship, I have it on tape and I watch it back, how she lit up because she could identify seeing that female. Do you see what I'm saying? Seeing someone that she could recognize. I want to see that for Vegas. And I'm speaking out to all promoters here in Las Vegas. You know who I am, Simon Street. I'm saying I want women's wrestling to be a force here in Vegas. But in order to work towards that, it needs to be a safe working environment to where they feel safe and empowered so that they can give their best. I have a daughter. Other people have daughters. They want to see that. That's all I want to say.
There's a lot of different things that all come together that have been affecting the Vegas scene. As far as women's wrestling go, and some of the fixes would require a lot of money. And I think that's going to be, and a lot of the things we just talked about, right? If we could have a restructure, get this or that stuff all costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think unless fans continue to be vocal, unless fans use their money to speak, you know, when someone comes into FSW, a woman comes into FSW that isn't normally there, the fans need to spend more money, more fans need to go, more people need to show up. When there's a card where there's no women on it, maybe people don't go to that one and vocally say why. Because unless you use money to show promoters, and that's not just FSW, that's any promoter, why they should spend more money, right? Then they're not going to do it. If you're like, oh, I have to spend extra money to fly this person in or get this person in, but I don't see a return on it. Or I have to spend more money to create these safety programs, but then I'm not having as many women students. I'm not having as many trainees come in who are female. I'm wasting my money, right? So as a fan, the biggest thing you can do is speak with your money. If you have a daughter and she's interested in wrestling, see if she wants to take a wrestling class, if they offer a kid's class. You know, if you've got an older daughter who's interested, tell her about a school and see if she wants to try it out. Maybe even go with her if you're worried about anything. But there's much that can be done by the fans, but a lot of it involves speaking with your wallet, because that's all these people understand. And that's why so many shows are actually taking the action this time around to kick people out, because they've been seeing now that fans will speak with their money and they will stop going to promotions that continue to have people. And that's the only thing that's finally forced this change, I think. So stay on them, please.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sarah, you are awesome. We thank you for definitely coming on the show to speak on this issue. We've talked about the issues and we've been given how we can go forward, and she left you with a good one. The fans are the ones in control. So all of you that are listening, when you hear these things happening, when you see these things happening, stop patronizing. They'll figure it out from that point. Yep. There will be some changes. The change always starts, it really starts from the bottom. It's not going to come from the top, folks. That's with anything, right? That's what we see all across this country. It ain't gonna come from the top. Come on, got to be from us. So
And really quick, DJ, one thing that you just said with the fans, there's been a reaction of fans like burning merchandise or just putting stuff away, etc. I would encourage, if you have any T-shirts, go ahead and find someone, donate them, where people can make masks, all right? Because you can take that extra material that is not, covered in print or whatever, and it could be used for something that is purposeful right now. So, keep that in mind, too. What are the ways you can get rid of this merchandise as you should, if you feel this is, something you want to part with? But let it go to a good cause at that point,
mm-hmm.
because, yeah. It's needed. It's needed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, with that, let me ask you, Sarah, are you going to hang out with us to our wrestling talk, or are you going to be like, I'm out of here?
Yeah, I got to work out. That's been I don't know if you've been hearing my alarm going off. It's going to do itself.
Also, well, I understand that. We appreciate you. We got to have you on other time just to pick your brain. So, please.
Happy to be.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll let you go, Sarah. And
thank you.
Bye, guys. All right.
Have a good workout.
All righty.
Bad Boys of Podcasting.